Hey, welcome to the Pirate Monk Podcast on SamsonSociety.org. I am your guest host, Aaron Porter from San Luis Obispo, California, here with the Pontiff Pirate, Nate Larkin, who's not wearing his hat today. Disappointing. And we've got Mondo Engineering the Action. So, welcome. We are looking forward to some good stuff today. Now, we got to start with the meetings. And, Nate, you missed your meeting to go to a porn convention? Is that... I'm confused.
Yeah. What? Is something surprising about it? Actually, no, let's be fair and accurate. Fair and balanced. I did not go to the porn convention. I dropped my wife off at the porn convention.
Better. Yeah, okay.
Wow, what a crazy week down there in Miami. The Miami porn show, Exotica, was held at the Miami Convention Center, and we went so that Allie could help staff the booth at the show. That's the Triple X Church booth.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a terrific time for Allie. She initially intended just to staff the booth for one night, but after arriving, she decided she wanted to do the whole show. So we extended our visit. And that's why I got home later than I planned and missed the Monday night meeting.
And I think it's important. I asked Allie what the point was. Why do the Triple X Church folks even go there?
Yeah.
And for anyone that looks it up news-wise, you're going to see picketers out front condemning everybody in just vicious ways.
Right. The bullhorns, you're going to hell message. Yes.
So, number one, they are inside saying, hey, there is a different Jesus we want to show you.
Yeah.
And then they go throughout the convention to the pole dancers and everybody giving them waters and just loving on them.
Yeah.
So, what an amazing thing to be right in the center of that, showing the love of Jesus Christ.
Yeah, yeah. Their message is Jesus loves you no matter what you've done. So, and that was good. And I'm glad that personally I took the advice of my friends and kept up good boundaries. I didn't imagine that I was bulletproof. I didn't go into the show. And I'm so glad I didn't, because I don't have to add any more images to my mental library. It was a whole battle I didn't have to fight.
Mm-hmm.
Did meet with some other fascinating people and good friends at Starbucks not too far from the convention center, and then got to spend some relaxing time with Allie when the show was not when she wasn't serving on the show floor.
Very good. Good trip.
That was a good trip, yeah. But it was an eventful week for me. But tell me about your meeting. Did you make it? You go to not one meeting, but I think two meetings out there in the Central Coast of California, don't you?
Yep. We discussed 3 months ago the Pastor Pirates in San Luis Obispo, and we have been working on our new North County group. So we've got the San Luis one and the North County one. Which
these are closed groups for pastors only.
Pastors only. So this is a place for them to feel safe with other pastors who have the same... I want to say the same isolation issues, and
right.
We talked about it at length in the last one.
Yeah.
And it's all sorts of pastors, not just senior pastors. We've got parachurch directors, and it's pretty much just full-time ministers.
Right.
Who do it.
Yeah.
It's been interesting in a new town. We've got a couple guys that were making the drive before that. They're our core group there, but starting over again, because the San Luis one's been going for 5 years or so,
mm-hmm.
starting over, trying to introduce the concept and build the relationships. And I'm kind of remembering that all of this has to start with just going to lunch and hanging out. Nobody's going to show up to a meeting just because you tell them it's a good thing, because this is just scary. So you got to build those relationships first in a smaller closed meeting. So
that's
where we're at. We're trying. It's takes a lot of work, a lot of time.
Did you guys do you do a topic for sharing at the meeting?
Yep, we do the exact same format.
What was your topic last week? Do you remember?
Geez, I don't remember, because I was on the road driving out here last week, so we're talking week before last.
Oh, that's right.
So, now this is a strange one. Yeah, I'm not even going to remember.
Okay.
Remember, Phil did the last one, and I thought it was stupid and said so. Ended up hurting. One of those.
Yeah, yeah. But you're telling me that even pastors, if you can get them in a place that's safe enough, are capable of and thrive on an authentic on authentic relationships.
Even pastors can do it. And I think that's an important way to say it, because, you know, the assumption is, oh, they must be really good at this. We're not. We're some of the worst at it because we feel like we have a lot to lose if we're honest with people.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a perception of who we are. We're super spiritual. We've got it all together until the news hits and we find out that all that isolation and being secretive about not being perfect has now come to major light.
Yeah.
Well, we'd rather be incremental and share our lives one step at a time so that we don't have to get there.
Oh, that's fantastic. Now, you guys are planning a special 48 Hours of Frankness.
Yeah, this is our first 48 Hours just for pastors, and it's going to be pretty small. I think we're just going to have 12 or so pastors, a couple from out of town, and really looking forward to it. We actually do a retreat every year. Usually spend 3 to 4 days playing Wii and sitting in the jacuzzi together. <We're> very spiritual, but it's a lot of fun. So this year we're actually being purposeful as pastors.
Okay. And you are accepting visitors from out of town. So if there's a pastor listening, anybody in full-time Christian ministry who would love to be able to, or at least is willing to entertain the thought.
Yeah, it's June 7th, 8th, and 9th, so they would need to get a hold of me like this week.
Okay.
So it's coming up in just a few weeks.
How are they going to get you, Aaron?
If you go to the SamsonSociety.org and look under events, it is there, and the contact information should be up.
Okay. There we are, and we will be back on the Pirate Monk Podcast.
Whoa! A pirate's life is a wonderful life, a roving over the sea. Give me a career as a buccaneer, it's the life of a pirate for me. Oh, the life of a pirate for me.
All right, welcome back to the Pirate Monk Podcast from Franklin, Tennessee. We have some letters this morning. So, Nate, what do you got over there on your computer?
Well, I've selected three letters from the last 2 weeks. Got a nice update from Chip Shepherd an update on the East Orlando meeting. East Orlando. Just an update from the East Orlando Pirate Monks. Chip writes, we had 12 men at the meeting on Sunday night. First time, for the very first time ever, we had to split into two groups.
Nice.
We then had 10 at the meeting after the meeting at the Mellow Mushroom. So that's cool. They did the meeting. They did the meeting after the meeting. And it looks like things are moving along there in East Orlando. We also got a note from Ocala Mike. The guys in Florida all, decided to write in 1 week. It's a cool thing. Man, I've been meaning to email you guys ever since I saw you at the University of Florida inaugural college thing. Really appreciated seeing you guys and hearing from you again. David, he says, you look totally different than I thought.
Thank you.
That's my David impression. That's pretty close.
And I don't know why, but it tickled me that you're married to Nicole C. Mullen. She really ministered to my mom and sister a few years back through her music. In fact, my sister said she saw you at a concert in Ocala and that you seemed like a cool guy.
Don't judge a book by its cover is where we start here.
He says, I really like the new meeting format. For those listeners who are unaware, the brothers in Knoxville have offered a powered-up meeting format that really goes after the Silas component of the Samson Society. I really like the new meeting format, as do the rest of the Ocala Pirate Monks. It's really pushed me into a Silas relationship. Today marks the day that I restart one. It really is a first try, though. I had a Silas before. It was pretty cool, but we worked together, so it didn't take much energy to build a relationship. And I still work with the guy. And he is a good friend, but he's been away from Samson for a while. I think it was just too easy for me to be casual with him as my Silas since we worked together. I've been kicking around the Silas thing in my head for probably 6 months, Now I have, and I've had sort of a few Silases. Today, though, he said, I called a guy from our group and made the commitment. I made sure to warn him that I'm going to try and call him every day, so he should beware.
Now, how can people get this supercharged format? Because they might be unaware of it.
Yeah, they can download it right from the upper right-hand corner of the main page, the pub page at SamsonSociety.org. You got your choice now. You can get the classic version, or you can get the Silas-charged version.
Silas-charged.
Yeah. Mike says, one of the favorite things you guys said at the University of Florida meeting was, kingdom things don't start big or showy. The real kingdom things start small. I can't remember exactly how you worded it, but I think about that a lot.
Hmm.
And that's something, by the way, I really do believe. Human enterprises tend to start huge and then fizzle.
Let's launch it.
Yeah. Kingdom things tend to start very small,
like a mustard seed,
like a little bit of leaven tucked into a lump of dough, as somebody said once.
So yeah,
yeah.
And pop quiz: this is from Church Yesterday, Hightower Church. Which did Jesus talk more about, church or the kingdom? Answer: the kingdom of God.
That's good. That's good. By the way, he says, on a lighter side, a totally different subject, I'm a home brewer now, really into brewing Belgian-style beers. Do you or David struggle with alcohol? No, I don't struggle. I just drink it. If not, I'd love to send you some occasionally and maybe get some feedback from you about my beer. Let me know. No big deal either way.
You're reading this, so all home brewing pirate monks will start sending you cases. This is ridiculously self-serving. I'm leaving. I'm not the guest host anymore.
I'm offering this as a service to the Samson Society.
Whatever makes you feel better.
That's right. If you need a certified beer rating, I think we probably can work. I can get you a certificate.
Now here's this brings up an interesting point, and
yes.
You started this.
Yeah.
You know, pirate monks can be seen as loose cannon kinds of guys.
This is true. Yeah.
And you know, here you are saying you drink the evil alcohol.
Right.
Well, what about guys who part of their spiritual journey includes, hey, I'm not going to be drinking alcohol, or I'm an alcoholic, and you might have those in the group.
Right.
And then, you know, guys come into the pirate monks and think, this is a place that I'm free. I can drink. I can have a beer in front of other Christians. We start to roll around in our freedom like a dog in poop. What do you say to those guys that are dealing with buddies, brothers?
Yeah. As Clint Eastwood said, a man's got to know his limitations. And part of what we have to do as brothers in the Samson Society is discover and disclose our limitations. I do know that I have lost my freedom in a number of areas because of the way I have abused and mistreated God's good gift. Mm-hmm. There are things I can't do. There are places I can't go. There are movies I can't see. And I know that for other guys, the issues are different. So I want to be sensitive to my brother who's abused alcohol. That's a deep conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Probably has a genetic predisposition in that direction. For whatever reason, he cannot drink and be free. If mm-hmm. he drinks, he loses his freedom.
Right, becomes a slave to the sin.
Right.
So the pirate monk standard is
we're for freedom.
We're for freedom, but we never hold our freedom more tightly than the love we hold for a brother.
That is true. That is true. So the way we do it in Franklin is, we started out having our meeting after the meeting at McCreary's Pub, and there's still on any given Monday night a meeting there after the mm-hmm. meeting. But from early on in Samson, we had guys among our number who are alcoholics.
Mm-hmm.
And we can talk about that. And the nice thing is, we understand. We don't segregate by sin in the Samson Society, and I understand that my addiction and another man's addiction, we share an inner architecture. The presenting problem is different, but below the surface, our issues are practically identical. So I try to guard his behavior as he tries to guard mine. So if I know a brother's issue is alcohol, I'm not going to encourage him to drink, or if I have any kind of relationship with him, if I'm his Silas, let him drink at a meeting after the meeting.
Mm-hmm. So you actually started a second meeting after the meeting at the Mexican restaurant.
Right, exactly. And some groups have parsed, and that's not an official Samson thing.
No, the official Samson thing is love each other.
Love each other and do what you think is right. There are other groups, and there are times when I wonder maybe their way is superior. There are other groups who have said, you know, that the best and safest way is just, we're just not going to have alcohol at our meetings after the meeting.
All right, so this is a great segue into the letter from our good friend Joe Perry from Orange County, California, a fellow Californian. And he had a question about meetings after the meeting, so let's get to his
letter. Joe wrote in a great topic, he says, of healthy meetings. It was a discussion that David and I had two podcasts ago. The things that make one healthy and the things that don't. Please consider this as a theme for a weekly segment.
Mm.
He says, a suggested topic is the after meeting. This is often the breakdown of healthy meetings. Many, many issues here. Can you unpack that topic, its importance, the barriers to it, and so on? Love, Joe.
Yeah. It's a vital part of meetings.
Yeah, isn't it? It's a little bit ironic that sometimes the most important part of the meeting is the meeting after the meeting.
Absolutely.
You know, my thought is that, we Christians who were raised in church were, programmed with this meeting mentality.
Mm-hmm.
At a given time on a given day in the week, we go into church mode and we pick up the requisite vocabulary and we talk about the appointed topics and we do the thing, whatever our pattern of worship is. And then at the end of the meeting, we say goodbye to everybody and we go back to our regular lives, probably bringing some resolve to do things different until the next meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Samson Society is, as we often say, has meetings, but it's not about the meetings. Samson lives between the meetings. This is something I learned in 12-step recovery. There needs to be kind of an off ramp from the structured meeting back mm-hmm. into my regular life.
Yeah, and boy, that brings up the fact that you can go to Samson meetings and it can be every bit as impotent as every other meeting you've ever been to, because if you don't get it into your real life, then it's just the place that you can feel better about yourself for a week and then fall right back into your patterns.
Right. I'm going to go into confession mode, or I'm going to go into discussion mode, and I'm going to talk about the things I haven't, but I'm still not making a connection to my real life.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow I haven't connected it also to the goofy stuff, to the laughter, to the joking, to a talk about sports, to everything else that makes up the rest of my life.
Because we don't need more meetings in our life. We need real friends.
Yes. So what we found is that there is something absolutely vital, I think, to the building of a healthy group. Something absolutely vital to following the structured formal time of a Samson meeting, to have a deliberate, unstructured, informal time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good to do that around food.
Yeah.
And if you have the freedom to do it, food and drink.
Mm-hmm. One of the barriers to it inevitably is time.
Right.
Okay, I can take an hour for the meeting, but my wife or my family expect me to be back, whatever. I think the challenge I would give is try the meeting after the meeting for 4 or 6 weeks and see how it changes your whole experience. I would say the same thing for people who don't have a silas. Try having a silas. Okay, you don't get it. Just try to do it all the way for just 4 weeks.
Yeah.
And you're going to start to see how the meeting becomes different.
Yeah.
And if you do have some expectations from your wife, then maybe you need to sit down with her and say, all right, hey, I need to try this, and here's why. Because any wife that really gets the component that's actually keeping her marriage stronger to us, she's going to want that if she gets it. If she thinks it's just you're going to go out and have fun and leave her with all the work, well, she might resent it. So have a real conversation with your wife about what you want in place in your life with your friendships to make it real, to make it deep, and this is part of that step.
Yeah. I remember visiting with you guys and the with the Pastor Pirates a few years ago and attending your regular meeting. And it was kind of a cool meeting, but it was almost seminar-like at the time. And it was about 90 minutes long, right?
It was back when we were still combining our meeting and meeting after the meeting.
Right, yeah.
Because we're pastors and we can do it our own way.
That's right, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of had a debrief afterwards. We talked about what you guys might try to do different.
You got all up in our faces.
Yeah.
They remember that.
Do they? Okay. And said, you really ought to be doing it. You need to be moving from this space and going to another space for a meeting after the meeting.
Yeah.
So what did you guys do and how did that work out?
We actually, for a couple years, our meeting's in the middle of the day. We actually decided we would commit to chunking out about 2 to 2.5 hours every Wednesday or Thursday. And so we could have our meeting and have our meeting after the meeting. We then recently have flipped it around where our meeting after the meeting is before, because we would find guys would come in a little late because they're rushing from a counseling appointment or a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So that actually gives a buffer of time where we haven't started the meeting and half the guys are still trickling in because of, you know, we've got inconsistent jobs. If someone needs a little more counseling, we're not going to say, I'm sorry, I got to go to a meeting. So we hang out before and just catch up with life. And then when everybody's there, after about 45 minutes, we settle into the meeting.
Okay.
So we found that's actually helped a lot with the meeting itself. Because it's really rough when guys come in late.
Yeah.
That really can...
Yeah.
If you're in the middle of talking about how your week's been, and because we have a closed meeting, instead of asking the question, you know, why have you come to this meeting, which is great if you've got new people,
right?
We just ask for a quick 2 to 3 minute update on their week, so it kind of gets everyone caught up.
And you know, there's lots of options for doing that informal time.
Mm-hmm.
If a guy's out of work or on a really tight budget. It can get expensive to go out to a restaurant every week. So other groups have solved that in other ways. They go to a coffee shop, sometimes just go to a guy's house and hang out on his deck.
Yeah.
But it's really important after you've sat in a room where there's no crosstalk. You've heard a guy, maybe you've poured out your own story, or you've listened to somebody else's. You've given the speaker the dignity of being heard. You've thanked him for what he said, but there hasn't been any interchange.
Right.
Which is crucial to keeping it a safe place.
Absolutely.
It's very important to have the opportunity later in an informal setting to reopen the subject in a friendly way. And very, very often in our meetings after the meetings, somebody will gently bring up a guy's share, and ask a question, and sometimes that leads to deep conversation.
Yeah, meeting after the meeting isn't just frivolity the time. It can get really important and deep in the follow-up. Yeah, that is the spot that it happens. Or I might come and share, and I want someone to give me feedback.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to ask for it in the context of the meeting. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And having the meeting before usually means you also have the meeting after with the guy that wants to talk about the thing. So you end up with it at both sides because that is the meeting after the meeting. It's one of the big purposes.
All right. So to our listeners, those of you who are going to a regular Samson meeting, if you've fallen into the formality trap, you got this thing down to 60 minutes and then you're out, If you're not getting together deliberately on a weekly basis for informal time, I want to challenge you.
4-week challenge.
Find a way to have a meeting after the meeting.
And that being said,
we'll be right back on the Pirate Monk Podcast.
Sex. And it's a message of a popular culture telling all our children how to do it right.
Well, we got a real special interview today here, Aaron.
I'm excited about it.
A guest I've been looking forward to for a long time, Dana Gresh, is on the phone with us.
Good morning, Dana.
Good morning.
Dana, I'm trying to recall when I first met you and Bob. It's been a few years. Dana and Bob Gresh live in State College, Pennsylvania. You do a bunch of things there, among them a remarkable high school called Grace Prep. Of course, you're a best-selling author and speaker, and you got all kinds of things on your plate. And I think a lot of them are going to be of great interest to our listeners here on the Pirate Monk Podcast. First of all, can you tell us a little bit about your growing up? Were you raised in a Christian home, Dana?
I was raised in a Christian home. I was raised in one of those homes that was so healthy that as an adult mother, I am haunted by trying to live up to it. It really was a healthy home. It wasn't a perfect home. There were flaws, but I had two very loving, engaged, emotionally healthy parents. But that didn't deter me from making some stupid decisions when I was a teenager, as is often the case. Sometimes good parenting does result in raising kids that rebel, and I was one of them.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't know anything about that. I think there's something wrong with you.
So parents cannot prevent their children from making stupid choices?
Well, you know, there are a lot of things we can do to equip our kids to make better choices, and that's what a big part of my ministry is about, is helping parents know what factors can you put in your kids' life so they do make good choices. But the fact is, it doesn't guarantee it. I mean, Adam and Eve walked with a perfect father, and they still rebelled.
Yeah.
So how you've honored your parents with what you said, how did they respond as good parents when you went through that time?
Well, you know, they weren't really aware of it because I was one of those kids who really quietly, and on the outside, I was going through all the perfect motions in my Christian high school at my church, and yet I was on the side in the quiet hours. I was sexually active with my boyfriend, and I think it's important to note that a lot of parents don't realize how much you have to ask questions of your teenage kids. You just have to be asking them, how are you doing in the area of sexual purity? How are you doing in the area of the temptation to drink or do drugs? If you don't ask the question point blank, you're never going to get an answer. There were many times when my heart was crying out for my mom and dad to know, but I didn't have the guts to bring that up and be straightforward about it.
What was that double life doing to you as a teenager who felt compelled to keep the outside looking Christian, but then also felt driven to be going outside of those beliefs in your social life with your boyfriend? What was that doing on the inside of you?
It crippled me. I was very depressed. I became very depressed, very withdrawn. And I know now that one of the top factors, or one of the top effects of teen sexual activity, especially in girls, is depression. In fact, so much so that a non-virgin girl is 12 times more likely to attempt suicide than her virgin peers. And that's very closely mirrored by boys. Boys, even though they have the bravado and they're still a depressive factor effect on their brain that they can't deny because it's how they were created when they're sexually active and then maybe not engaged with that person anymore because, let's face it, most teenagers don't stay together, and I didn't stay with my boyfriend.
Now this is a message you bring this message to an awful lot of kids. In fact, I had the privilege of appearing with you at an event in Atlanta a couple of years ago. I was astonished by the size of the crowd and really taken with your ability to connect with them. How long have you been doing those events for teenagers?
12 years. We love it.
I'm curious, can you describe what that ministry to teenagers is? What is it? What are the aspects or components of that ministry?
We're really just trying to get in the trenches with them and walk with them, which is very much what Nate does and what he teaches through Samson Society. Is we're just trying to create accountability and real world language with real world problems in real time with these students. In other words, we don't want to just preach purity to them. We want to get in the trenches and say, this is how we've messed up. How can we help you learn from our mistakes? And where are you messing up? It's a very transparent ministry.
I had also had an opportunity sometime after the trip to Atlanta. I came up to State College and met your kids, actually spoke at a chapel at Grace Prep. I loved the atmosphere at the high school that you and Bob lead there. It was a striking contrast to most of the Christian schools I've been around, including one I led years ago.
Yeah.
Tons of transparency.
Well, yep, that's very intentional. There are many things that caused us to start the Christian school, the high school, but one of them was being at an event, at one of our live events, and sitting with a girl who just found out she was pregnant. And she was just repentant as they come. She and her boyfriend wanted to get married. The church that they were in had decided that because they'd sinned, the church would not marry them. They'd have to go to a justice of the peace or something. And the Christian high school she was attending had said she could stay to the end of the semester, but then she had to leave. And I was so angry at the Pharisaical Christianity that this broken, repentant, needy teenager was getting, and her boyfriend as well, that Bob and I we said, who is being the church to you? And she said, you know who's being the church to me? She said, I have a job at Chili's, and my manager is gay, and most of the people I work with have really huge issues with drugs or alcohol or sexual addiction, but they love me. And they're taking care of me, and they're walking with me, and they're making sure every day that I get out of bed and I face the day. And I thought to myself, shame on us. Shame on the church. We should be the ones walking with that broken girl. And so we've created a high school where kids can come to us in real time and saying, I'm struggling with porn. I just had sex with my boyfriend. I just used heroin. Whatever they're struggling with, you know, it doesn't mean we're going to have cheap grace. We drug test those kids randomly when they say they're struggling with drugs. But we don't turn our backs on them. We walk with them because I think Jesus would have.
So that's an important component of that ministry, is that you're not just preaching abstinence. You're also following along and discipling those who have not lived up to that standard. And that's an important piece. Because the abstinence programs, I think, to a lot of people's views, are a very legalistic bunch of programs where there isn't a lot of grace if you're not in. So how do you see your program, especially the abstinence portion, as being different than some of the other programs that are out there?
Well, I think a huge part of our ministry is the healing component of it. And picking up the broken kids. You know, most of these kids have sexual sin of some type in their life, whether it's oral sex when they're in middle school or an addiction to pornography or anything. I mean, they're struggling. These are the church kids, the pastor's kids, the homeschool kids. They are struggling. And if we don't walk with them with transparency, they're never going to heal and have the opportunity to live out God's best for them.
Hmm. So you've managed to create a safe place at Grace Prep. I could feel the safety of that place, where a kid could actually come.
It's amazing.
And without fear of retribution, say exactly what's going on. It's a little tougher to communicate that in a short period of time to a large audience at an event. Can you describe? Now, I've had the opportunity to attend one of your events. And by the way, don't let me forget, I want to get to Secret Keeper Girl later. But the high school stuff, can you describe for Aaron and for our listeners how one of the high school events typically goes?
Well, you know, we start out with kind of a celebration of God's call to purity, and we're together with the guys and the girls. But we make certain that we break up guys only and girls only on Saturday all day, because the guys are really struggling with visual issues. Their primary sexual organ is their eyes, and we need to kind of give them tools to combat the battle they're going to face with their eyes. Girls are struggling with heart issues. There are some girls that struggle with the visual issues. It's happening more and more. But even those girls, underneath it, what they're being motivated by is a heart relationship. At the end of every event, we always end with just a very transparent call to what we call an invitation to be in the secret of the Lord, which Psalm 25:14 says that the people of God are like an intimate secret, because they share each other's hurts and failures and fears, and they share each other's sins. And that's a mask-free, transparent place. And I just taught this message over the weekend at an audience in Connecticut. And, you know, to hear that the church isn't supposed to be a country club where we come in and we look good and we all act the same and vote the same and eat the same stuff, but it's supposed to be a place where we cry and weep. You know, I held a woman, a 20-year-old that was struggling with heroin addiction. She'd gone 9 months, and then this week she'd fallen again. And somebody had to look her in the eye and say, you can do it, and this time you're going to go 10 months or 12 months or 24 months, but you can do this. And so that's a very important part of our event every time, is letting those kids just say, this is where I am, raw and ugly as it is. And we always do it at the end, because by then they've seen all of our stuff.
Right. I love the heart behind that, and I think that makes your ministry real in the Christian sense. But I have to ask the question. You're doing an abstinence program, so the secular person on the outside is going to say, Dan, this is ridiculous. Statistically, these kids are having sex, so what you are preaching at them is unrealistic, is not going to happen. You're just heaping more shame and guilt by putting a moral structure in their lives that they can't live up to. Abstinence programs are culturally irrelevant, and you're just causing more damage. What do you say to that person?
Yeah. Well, the irony of that mentality is that the most sexually satisfied people are those who do live a life of purity. Some of the most sexually some of the most accurate sexual studies to date, really with a very left-winged liberal bias in them, will demonstrate that those who have been able to have just one lifetime mutually monogamous partner enjoy sex more than those who've had multiple partners. And to say that, well, let's not let people experience that. Let's not let people experience the best sex because we just want to have a lot of fake counterfeit sex, is just watering down the power of God's word. When he puts guidelines in place for us, it's so that we can enjoy the best of how he created us to function. Our brains and our bodies or creative dysfunction within a monogamous, faithful sexual relationship. Anything outside of that, you get depression, you get sexually transmitted diseases, you get addiction, which is never healthy because it's feeding lust, not love. And to call these kids out and say you can do it because it's possible, roughly 50% of teenagers leave high school at virgins. They are doing it. It is possible.
It's important to note, then, that your ministry of abstinence is very pro-sex. You're pro-good sex. You just want the best.
Absolutely. We love sex.
There you go. So,
all right. Dana, are you speaking to audiences other than teen audiences these days?
We started to work with tween, little girls, 8 to 12-year-olds, just because the culture has been so relentless in targeting them, sexualize them. It's the norm today to dress your 7-year-old to look like she's a 17-year-old prostitute. And so we really started to just take fun, age-appropriate events across the nation. We'll do 30 to 60 of them this year.
Wow.
And we're just teaching them age-appropriate things about not being boy crazy. And you know, your beauty isn't wrapped up in that miniskirt that everybody says you have to buy. There's something deeper to you than that. So we are really starting to get, we're moving the line of the battle back to the enemy has.
That's wonderful. And those events are catching on like wildfire. That was the toughest ticket around here, I think, was Secret Keeper. Yeah. Yeah, Dana, we see it, most of the guys in the Samson Society are between the ages of 25 and 45, typically. I don't know if it's safe to make that statement. We got guys on... We got a big bell curve.
Yeah, for sure.
And we've got I don't know how many women listen to the podcast, but it seems like a fairly large number of our listeners are female. We talk an awful lot about the sexualization of the culture that we live in today, and the damage that it does to individuals and to relationships and to families. But since we're so far removed from the teen years and don't have a lot of direct contact with teens, we're probably not as sharply aware of it as you are. Can you talk for a little bit about the sexualization of contemporary culture and how it's affecting our kids?
Our kids are just being devoured by it. And a really good example of it is the Miley Cyrus video that just came out recently where... You know, it's a very transgressive, violent sexual video. It's not the most vulgar video that I've ever seen, but we have this model for 8, 9, 10-year-old girls who's suddenly writhing around and self-gratifying herself on video. That for an 8-year-old to see that, you know, we wouldn't have seen that as a 42-year-old. I wouldn't have seen that until I was an adult, and it would have been in a seedy corner somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And now our kids are just seeing it on mainstream TV. And but friends with benefits, you know, is an entirely new thing that most parents don't understand, that when a guy gets horny, he calls his friend that lives across the cul-de-sac and says, hey, you know, let's just hook up. It doesn't mean anything. It won't change our relationship. But the fact is it does, because the chemicals of sex bond us to whatever we're sexual with, whether it's a fix on a TV screen or our friend across the cul-de-sac that we said we're not going to mean anything. But it does mean something. So our kids are screwed up. They're depressed. They're wondering why. Well, maybe it's because you're hooking up with your guy friend when he calls and just says, you know, I feel like having sex right now and you're available. Parents and adults don't even comprehend what our kids are going through because it's such a guerrilla warfare compared to what we face.
There was a quote years ago when I was in youth ministry when American Pie first came out, and a lot of the high school group were watching it, and they, you know, such a great movie, blah, blah, blah. And I remember reading a quote in Rolling Stones where it said, this is a movie for a new generation of youth where the girls are even lustier than the guys. How do we take that, all of this stuff that's pouring into them, saying, girls, you're just like the guys in this, which is just absolutely not true, and it's a scary message to give the girls. How do we turn back the tide when the media is pouring into them all of these images and ideas? What can we do as adults, as parents?
I think one of the things is to be smart about how we talk to them about sex. We can't just say no. You know, telling someone to go on a diet, but not telling them you're going to look better, you're going to feel better, you're going to be stronger because you're withholding yourself from this chocolate cake and lasagna. We wouldn't do that to somebody. We would tell them the benefit. And with sex, it seems like parents don't do that. They don't get smart about it, and they don't say, listen, you're going to have great sex. You know what I tell older teenage girls? If you can hold out on this, the likelihood of you being orgasmic is much greater, because girls who are sexually active with multiple partners, when they get into their marriage bed, are most likely to be inorgasmic. And when you talk to them in terms of very specific, measurable effects of the promiscuity of this culture, they begin to say, maybe there's something to this. Maybe God had something in mind for us. When they understand that sex abstinence is not about not having sex, but it's about waiting to have it right, there's a motivation that we can tap into, and then they start to listen to our messages of how to wait. They need to know why.
Yeah. So for the parents listening, because I know if I were to say what you just said to my non-Christian friends, they would say that is ridiculous. So where would we find information by which we can prove those types of things that are the measurable? Hey, statistically, you're going to be more orgasmic. I mean, that's dangling a carrot. That's good stuff.
Yeah, that information is in a study called Sex in America, which is published. You can find it on Amazon.com. It was a study out of the University of Illinois at Chicago. That was a great secular study. Their intention was really to study the homosexual community. It was a very left-wing agenda. And one of the things that's in that, oddly enough, is that religiously active, monogamous people are the most sexually satisfied in their middle-aged years. So, you know, you look at the statistics, the facts, and you can't argue that God's plan works.
That is great stuff. Well, Dana, I love your heart. I love your courage. I love that you step up and you're willing to attack subjects that most Christians are a little bit too queasy.
It would shrink from in a heartbeat.
Yeah, yeah. And you've been given a terrific gift. I was astonished by your ability to connect with kids. You owned the room that night. I heard you speak. How can our listeners find you?
Well, they can find us at purefreedom.org or secretkeepergirl.com.
Wonderful.
Very good.
Again, thank you so much for being a guest here on the Pirate Monk Podcast.
Welcome back once again to the Pirate Monk Podcast. So what did you think of that? That was quite an interview with a bold lady.
Yeah, you know what? I love Dana and Bob Gresh, and I love their heart for the broken and their willingness to share their brokenness and weakness with other people to make it safe for people to bring their real selves. I got to tell you, the most touching part of that interview for me was when she described the girl who was being shunned by her church community.
I knew you were feeling that.
Oh, man. And church for her became Chili's. How tragic. What an indictment.
That the only people with Christian grace were those that didn't know Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Yeah, it's my prayer that Samson will always be a safe place for the repentant sinner.
And a place that reaches out to the unrepentant sinner.
That's good. Absolutely. Well, Aaron, it's been a pleasure having you with us. You made the drive all the way across country with a donated car that you were delivering to its recipient.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll be here for a few more days, and then you're flying back home. Quite an adventure driving across the country.
It was great to have that. Some alone time and just enjoying. You know, the car might have been for someone else, but the drive was for me.
Well, Allie and I have just loved having you here. Looking forward to a few more days before we got to give you back. And, well, listeners, until next week, we'll sign off. This has been the Pirate Monk Podcast from SamsonSociety.org.
Sex. And it's a message of a popular culture telling all our children how to do it right. Child, and it doesn't get much worse than that.